Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio today is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
And coming to us live from the Gulf is chairman of our advisory board, my co-host, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing up there?
We're doing great. How are you doing down there?
Fantastic. Sunny Florida weather, beautiful skies, beautiful water, and perfect temperature. What can I say?
Yeah, it's a great springtime day. And to all our listeners, thank you for spending time with us this morning. We got a great program coming up. We're going to talk about two really interesting, every week it seems like we come at healthcare consumerism from a different angle. And today we're going to bring on two guests that will also have members of their team or themselves speaking with us at IHC Forum and Expo coming up. But our first guest will be Jill Burton, who's founder and CEO of Will. And Will is a digital health company focusing on mindfulness in the workplace. And he's going to talk about how impactful mindfulness is, how it has real results around reducing stress and, improving employees' attitudes. So it should be very interesting. And again, that'll be a topic at Forum. We have a workshop focused on that, and the Will team will be there and be exhibiting. And then our second guest today is Dr. Stephen Weiniger, who is a posture expert. He's a doctor of chiropractic and with the Foundation of Chiropractic Practice. And, May is Posture Month, and he has written a book about posture. He's known across the country nationally as an expert on posture. So, again, it'll be interesting to hear him talk about posture and its impact on productivity, its impact on employee health, and, family's health. So great couple of guests today, right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get, too much further into the show this morning, we want to take a minute, of course, to thank Aflac, both for their support of this radio program and of the event later this month in Atlanta. If you will be at Forum this year, you can join Aflac in session 103 on May 24 for a discussion on elevating the value of voluntary benefits as essential benefits. So if you haven't registered yet, there's still a little bit of time. Go to theihccforum.com and select session 103 on your Track 1 workshop.
Yeah, and we hope you can join us here in Atlanta. But if you can't, just take note that on this program and throughout, our content platforms here at the Institute, we're going to continue through the month of May and June, focusing on the changing landscape of voluntary benefits and what employers and brokers need to know about these changes. And Aflac, according to their workforce report, stated that employers are enrolled in voluntary benefits are both more satisfied with their overall benefit packages and with their place of employment. Employers and the brokers that support them can rethink their voluntary benefit strategy in context of today's environment and be better equipped to succeed in the future. In fact, if you look at today's consumer-driven landscape, more and more employers are moving to high-deductible health plans, often leaving employees on the hook for unexpected medical costs. So as we talk about voluntary is really becoming an essential benefit or a core benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, as we mentioned, stay tuned to future episodes of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We will have a series of thought leaders from Aflac joining the program to talk about the new landscape of voluntary benefits and how they are changing into an essential workplace benefit. And, just a final reminder, register today, the event is coming up right around the corner. So if you're going to join us at IHC Forum and Expo, you can join Aflac in session 103.
Again, we'll be here May 24th to 26th, IHC Forum and Expo. We've got an exciting program, in-depth program. We've got a quality group of Innovation Showcase sponsors that will be joining us, showing their innovation. So, we're really looking forward to seeing everyone here in Atlanta. And Ron, we kind of kick off with a really pretty exciting opening keynote, don't we?
Absolutely. I think the entire program is just packed full of quality information, quality speakers, great topics. I think the the large employers kicking off with the keynote on wellness. You know, it's absolutely amazing to me how mainstream healthcare consumerism has become in so many different ways, with and more new ideas are being added all the time. The creative, thoughtful ways our presenters today are going to be expanding, in my opinion, the whole idea of well-being, of wellness being expanded into whole new areas. You know, it's kind of like the future is now, and healthcare consumerism is mainstream. So we're going to find out very early on, in the very first opening session, the keynote, what the major companies in Atlanta are doing in terms of wellness and how it's morphing and evolving into all these other new areas of well-being and mindfulness and all the different aspects, whether it's financial well-being or safety or trying to create more of a healthy mind, a healthy thinking to keep us active and young in the mind as well as the body, so that, you know, trying to keep yourself healthy in all different ways and aspects has become very important. And we're going to hear a lot about the latest and greatest that the biggest companies in Atlanta are doing and sharing their stories. I think everybody will benefit from that, whether you're a large company or a small company, to know what the leading edge new ideas and creative thoughts are that's going on in the marketplace. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, and I think with high deductible plans, you know, becoming kind of becoming mainstream, that, you know, wellness is really a valuable, you know, tool program for employees and their families to better manage their health. And employers see that not only real time improving productivity, but a real retention tool too for their employees. You know, it keeps their employees happy, healthy, and engaged with them and feeling better about the employer, you know, that they're working for.
Absolutely. You know, wellness, I think in the early stages, we always think of wellness in terms of health and wellness being physical. But now it's actually gone into so many new areas, whether it's some would call it brain fitness. So it's not just physical fitness, but brain fitness. So wellness and well-being have again, evolved to a whole different area. And we'll hear a lot about different thoughts of what employers are doing and how this is sort of feeding into the marketplace and how it creates additional choices and options and conveniences of how to do things, some education, training, the health literacy aspects of learning about all this stuff. I mean, it's all sort of coming together. It's really exciting to watch and see how the marketplace is evolving with all these new ideas and new products and services. Companies have really gotten creative, and they're showing their value and worth on how they improve productivity, lower absenteeism, reduce disability claims, help with workers' compensation being lower. All the different aspects are beginning to feed together so that we have not just siloed solutions, but an integration of various approaches that may be different for each company. I mean, some of these solutions will work great in one company and not so well in another company. So,
yep.
You know, if you're out there and trying to figure out what to do, you need to see the whole spectrum of what's working and figure out what works best for your company, because it's not going to be the same as it is for somebody else necessarily, but you'll get great ideas.
Yeah, and, you know, the big impact of technology, too, where innovation is taking hold in not just digital health. Here we're talking about wellness, but in, you know, helping employers better manage their whole benefit programs, you know. And,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, we're certainly going to be talking about exchanges or whatever name we want to put on them. I think that's a common discussion taking place in the marketplace. What is an exchange? You know, and is it going to move as fast forward as people have predicted? But, you know, that'll be a key discussion point. Compliance. John Hickman will be talking about compliance. We're going to do a special session, general session on millennials and how they're really impacting and going to really change healthcare and change benefits, you know, out there. So, you know, again, you still have time to join us here. As Jonathan said earlier, you can register at theihccforum.com, and we kick open the event on the 24th of May. And, in fact, one of the companies that will be presenting, one of the messages that will be there and be exhibiting there is our next guest, in fact, Joe Burton, the CEO and founder of Will Concept. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you on the program here. And I love this topic. We're really excited about, you know, your team coming to join us here in Atlanta. We're excited to have you on the radio with us today. Give us a little background on Will, and then we'll get into what is mindfulness and, you know, some of these key talking points.
Sure. So Will's a digital mindfulness training platform. We produce programs to help employees reduce stress, increase resiliency and performance, and just be healthier and happier. We've got one program around mindfulness training. We incorporate meditation and then tactics, techniques people can take into their day-to-day just to be calm, cool, and collected. We have a movement program based in yoga, helping people relax the central nervous system, calm the mind while they're getting exercise. We have a program for teenagers called Grow, which is mindfulness for teenagers. And anyone who has a teenager, grab it fast. And then our first leadership program was created in collaboration with a Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. This is the famous leadership and emotional intelligence program that was created at Google. And so those are the programs we currently offer.
That's exciting stuff. So tell us, give our audience a definition on mindfulness and you know, really why all of a sudden we're all talking about it.
Sure. When we talk about mindfulness, we're really focused on attention training and awareness training, really helping people get in touch with how their mind works to help them reduce their own stress and anxiety, just enable them to sort of focus, show up and be focused and perform in the moment. A lot of people think that mindfulness is just meditation. Meditation is one of the techniques within an overall mindfulness training that helps people really show up as their best self throughout the course of the day. I think there are probably three reasons that the world is now talking so much about mindfulness. The first is, you know, it's on the cover of every major magazine, you know, from Time to Fast Company. There's a new business book on mindfulness and mindfulness in business every other week. So it's like in the conversation. It's the top three winners of the Super Bowl, the World Series, and the NBA Championship. All of these teams are practicing mindfulness to help their athletes perform and be in the moment. So that's caused a lot of conversation. What is this stuff? And I think most importantly, there's been an explosion in science around mindfulness. So I think back in 1980, there was one study on how mindfulness can help with health. Since then, there have been thousands. They're coming out 80 per month this year. And that's basically where science is looking at how mindfulness correlates to improving health, reducing anxiety, depression, improving sleep, you know, so helping people with insomnia, reducing things like chronic back pain. And I think this explosion of science is really what's getting people interested about, like, maybe there's something here. And that conversation is now going squarely into corporations where so many people are suffering from stress and burning out earlier in their career.
What are some of the biggest hurdles that you face from some of these big employers, you know, as you begin to talk with them about mindfulness?
I think that some of the biggest hurdles is when we're talking to a customer who doesn't have a personal experience with mindfulness, they have these sometimes can have a notion of like, oh, you know, people in sandals burning incense. And that's not the case at all. I was one of those, you know, a little bit on my background. I was the global COO of a 50,000-person division of a public company. And so I spent most of my career flying around the world stressing people out. And I would have been the last person, you know, 5 years ago to say, let's bring mindfulness into the company. You know, I would have been laughed out of the boardroom. I came to mindfulness, you know, just out of crisis. I was dealing with chronic back pain for about 5 years to the point where it was really affecting my health. You know, I developed insomnia, I developed asthma. It was really just all stress-driven. And so, you know, after the fifth time of my doctor saying, look, I want you to give, you know, mindfulness a try. I think meditation is going to help you with chronic back pain. I relented, and, you know, I'm so glad I did. You know, 5 years later, we're working with some of the biggest companies on the planet to help their employees, you know, advertising agencies like Havas and Ogilvy, University of North Carolina, Microsoft. And most of these customers are really interested in how can we help our, you know, our employees, our students just be healthier and happier and deal with the pace, just deal with the pace of modern living. I mean, it's, you know, it's bad these days. And you think about what it's going to be like, you know, 10, 15 years from now. It's where a lot of companies are in a crisis. What's going on with healthcare? What's going on with depression, anxiety, pharmaceutical usage, and turnover and absenteeism? You know, it's a big deal. And so I think they quickly get over that hurdle of what is this to, oh, okay, I get it. I know why, you know, so many companies are talking about it. I get why, you know, sports teams are doing it. And, you know, so that's kind of the primary hurdle for someone who's never, not that familiar with it.
Yeah. Ron, you have a question for Joe?
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. This is exciting stuff. One of my missions in life for a long time now has been expanding mental health services, and I worked across the country in getting mental health parity passed at the state and ultimately at the federal level. Still stay connected to the Carter Center in Atlanta and Mrs. Carter, whose mental health advocacy has been strong for many years, as well as working with Patrick Kennedy and others. What's exciting to me, and maybe you can kind of connect some of the new terms that are developing here for our audience, mindfulness and well-being and terminology like brain fitness are all sort of coming to the forefront. Can you give any sort of a connection between some of these ideas and thoughts, and how do they relate to each other, and where are we going with all this discussion?
Yeah. So I think the there are a lot of names for mindfulness or mental well-being. We also hear a lot around, we use, you know, brain training, attention training, situational awareness training. The folks at Google call it emotional intelligence. At the end of the day, I think different communities are really sort of figuring out what's the right language to deal with stress, anxiety, mental well-being, and all of these conversations are really opening up to, you know what, mental fitness is just as important as physical fitness. And, you know, even people who are incredibly fit and healthy are suffering from the same diseases as people who don't exercise. And that's primarily driven by, you know, how people handle stress. Do they have the tools to cope with it? And so I think the, you know, as the world's exploring mental wellness, there's where I think a lot of companies, including ours, are trying to get language that's really open and relatable for normal people, right? It's, you know, my biggest fear when I heard meditation, you know, 5 years ago was like, you know, look, I'm not, you know, I'm not into anything hippy-dippy, and that's just not for me. And then only when I began to study it and understand what it was did I open up to, oh, okay, great, this is going to help me with back pain. I get that. It's going to help me sleep better. I get that. And then understanding the science behind it, of what's actually happening in the brain, like learning to actually practicing a situational awareness or focused attention, you're changing your neural pathways. You're learning to focus, not just in the 5 or 10 minutes of mindfulness practice, but throughout the other 24 hours of your day. And when you're able to do that, you get all those mental benefits that a lot of companies are a little bit shy to talk about, right? You understand you actually cause a lot of your own stress by worrying about the future, by worrying about the past, by thinking people are out to get you. I think Harvard University did a study. The average person spends 47% of their time with the mind wandering. And people whose minds wander, as it turns out, they tend to be, much more prone to depression and much more prone to disease. So they focus on everything except, you know, what's the matter at hand. And it's not good for people, not good for their health, and, you know, ultimately that's not good for business. But
right,
I think all of these terms are sort of friendly terms and opening up the conversation for people who have historically been uncomfortable in talking about mental well-being.
Right. You know, on the corporate side, one of the terms that I like to use in the past, it's not part of the current lexicon, I guess, but I still kind of like it, is I call mental wealth. WELLTH with double meaning for a corporation, that if you're dealing with these issues, will help your bottom line as well. So there is a lot of financial benefits in terms of expanding creativity and teamwork and all the different aspects of productivity that can come along with it. Is that what a lot of your studies are showing? And can you point the audience to some specific studies that might be reinforcing to those concepts?
Yes, absolutely. First, let me just say, I love the notion of mental wealth. I just wrote it down and I'm feeling it.
Good. You're welcome, sir.
Yeah. This is when we talk first on the science, when we talk to big customers, and some of our customers have, 300,000 plus employees around the world. Almost every single company we talk to, they start with faster, cheaper. Okay. And that's kind of in terms of what they're looking for. And so they want, to increase performance, they want to increase productivity, and they want to reduce things like healthcare costs and absenteeism. And we get that. Those are sort of table stakes for business these days, and it's a requirement to be in business. But the way you get that is actually by taking care of the individual, right, the individual, helping the employee deal with whatever it is they might be suffering from. So, the individual is looking to improve things like focus or healing time or self-control, or reduce things like, anxiety or insomnia or back pain. And so when you talk about this notion of mental wealth, what we're finding is what the science has correlated to is when you help the individual deal with that, you get the benefits of lower healthcare costs, fewer days of absenteeism, lowering the amount of presenteeism, where people show up but they're actually not doing much because they can't focus. And that's right. Where you get the big bang for your buck. What we're seeing in our own research is customers seeing, not only drops in absenteeism and healthcare costs, but employee satisfaction surveys go up. So people like their jobs more. They like being at their mm-hmm. company more. And this really comes from a result of them having the training, the sort of the mental fitness to not take things so personally, not, to be more collaborative, to be open to whatever is going on in the moment. The business world's pretty tough. Things are changing rapidly. And if you have the kind of mental fitness where you can roll with it, still show up as your best self, and not take things so personally, you're going to be able to perform better and enjoy it more. So
Joe,
that's what a lot of the science suggests.
Joe, let me ask this. When you're working with the employees and their families, and what do you say to people who think meditating might be too hard? How do you help them get engaged and embrace this?
Sure. So whenever someone asks me, is meditating hard, I say, yes, it is. So when I first started, the first few weeks kind of drove me nuts. The notion of sitting quietly or listening to meditation content for, 5 or 10 minutes initially was really difficult. And when they call it getting into a mindfulness practice, the reason it's called a practice is you really have to stick with it. You're mm-hmm. practicing, you're actually training your brain to focus. And you do that by, focusing on things like your breath or your heartbeat or pressure points in your body, things that are always with the individual. And by the practice itself is, as you focus on your breath, you notice, oh, I get distracted. My mind's going somewhere else. Let me bring my attention back. And doing that time and again, what you're actually doing is training your brain to be able to focus at any point during the course of the day, right? So beyond helping to lower your blood pressure, reducing your resting heart rate, relaxing your central nervous system, you're training your brain. And so there's no pill form for that, right? There's no pill form of mindfulness. You actually have to practice it. And the very notion of practicing it has a wide array of health and performance benefits. The real benefits are just like, wow, I kind of feel better a lot in almost everything that I do.
Well,
you mentioned you had asked about some resources. There, you can, if you did any of your listeners do a search on sort of the science of mindfulness, you'll find many, many studies, literally thousands. We also have ebooks on our website at will.com that give people the background on science in a relatable format. Like, we serve professionals. So everything that we do is really, how does it work? Why should I care? For people who don't have a lot of time in their day. The University of California has a lot of research. Harvard University has a lot of research on mindfulness and the science behind it. And so your audience can find a bunch of things out there.
Hey, Joe, we've got about a minute to go, and I'd like to give you a chance to close this. And, one of the questions that and responses for our audience here is that what advice do you have for, you know, companies and people that are thinking about giving mindfulness?
Yeah, I would say that probably the best advice is get started and start slow, right? We usually start companies off when we're dealing with their employees. We'll recommend a minute a day, you know, try a minute a day just taking mindful breaks. We like to build people up, you know, into 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Most of the science around mindfulness suggests 10 minutes on a fairly regular basis, 3 or 4 times a week, really start to change your neural pathways, start to change the activity in your brain, and you start to see the benefits of, you know, lowering your resting heart rate, lowering your blood pressure, and so forth. So I'd say give it a try and start slow. The last thing I would recommend anyone is jump in and say, I'm going to do this for an hour a day. I don't even do an hour a day. I think that's kind of crazy for busy professionals. But if you can build yourself up to 5 to 10 minutes on a fairly regular basis, I think you'll see your life change.
That's great, Joe. Listen, this has been an interesting segment, and we really appreciate you taking time out of your day and joining us. And again, I want to remind our audience that Joe's team will be present at our forum coming up May 24th, 26th here in Atlanta. Joe, you have a great weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, and visitors can go to will.com and start for free. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe, very
Thank
much.
You.
Take care. Ron, that's good stuff, huh?
It really is. It's exciting to me because, you know, we're seeing more and more people having to deal with stress or even low levels of depression, if you want to define it that way, by taking medication. So I would say for employers out there, take a look at the psychotropics that your population may be taking, whether it's your employees or their family members, to deal with stress by taking medications. And this would be a cheaper, better way, a more holistic way to actually dealing with those costs and those issues that employees face. And I think because we have such a fast-moving society with so many things going on, pressures from all around, especially with the job market being tight in many areas, people unemployed, family members going through all sorts of traumas, people are having to deal with more stress today than maybe ever before. And more of them are just taking pills to try to deal with it, which just covers over it rather than really changing your lifestyle. So this is exciting stuff. I'd even say years ago, there's an old book that I read that was very helpful to me. I don't practice it as regularly as I should of taking that quiet time, but there's a book out there that was called The Power of Now. And if you think about it, how do you just stay in the now without thinking about the past, the future? How do you focus on basically nothing, because now this is a fleeting nanosecond. It's very difficult to train your mind to do that. So I think Joe gave some good advice, and I'm sure he's got lots of materials in his own website and his own program that help people sort of begin to focus on that calming effect of just stopping thinking about all the problems. Don't think about the worst things that can happen or all the dangers in your life. Try to figure out some positive ways to deal with all those. And I think this is exciting stuff for consumerism as it continues to expand.
Yeah, it hits me actually kind of personally because as an ADD entrepreneur, I can't imagine sitting still for 5 minutes, but it makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know, if you think about it, they say some of your best ideas for entrepreneurs come when you're in the shower because you're not thinking about anything. You're just enjoying the water coming on you and that quiet moment in the shower. And sometimes that's where some of your best ideas come from. If you ever do a survey of creative people, it's those moments, and that's what he's trying to create, that calming moment. And it's amazing how many ideas will come into your mind that will help your entrepreneurial spirit as well.
Yeah, you got it. Well, listen, we're about to switch hats, but I mean, talk about another interesting part of total well-being and wellness. I'd like to welcome our next guest on the program, Dr. Steven Weiniger, who's a posture expert and a chiropractic doctor and with the Foundation of Chiropractic Progress. Doctor, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you on here, Stephen. Give our audience a little background on, you know, the foundation that's a regular participant with us at our events, and we look forward to having you here with us. And then talk a little bit about Posture Month.
The Foundation for Chiropractic Progress is the public communications arm of the chiropractic profession. It is basically communicating to the world, to society, that chiropractic is, well, as I put it, the Rodney Dangerfield of healthcare. People don't give chiropractic the respect for the things that we've helped so many people with in so many different ways. And the the axiom that once somebody goes to a chiropractor, they find that they didn't realize how much better they could feel is kind of what the foundation talks about, especially for things like back pain, avoiding opioid abuse. You mentioned taking pills being an issue, and it is a huge issue, and for avoiding problems. And my connection with the foundation is I'm a doctor of chiropractic, but I focus on posture, and chiropractors tend to be also very focused on posture because they look at the body, and when you adjust somebody, you're affecting how the body moves, which affects posture. And the part that we get into specifically is helping people to help their own posture, to look at their posture. I am the what they're calling the chief posture evangelist of posturemonth.org, which is an annual time to focus on posture, and we're working with corporations and people to make them stop and look at their posture and to start having smarter posture habits.
Why is that important, Steve? Why is that important?
Well, especially in today's world, and especially in corporations and companies, people spend a huge chunk of their life sitting. And they're not just sitting. They're sitting with their hands locked together on a keyboard with their head pushed forward looking at a screen. And when they're not doing that, they're texting on a phone looking down at their belly. And their bodies are literally being molded in this position. I spoke at a conference in Orlando about 2 weeks ago, and I saw a family that had a mom and dad and a boy and a girl. And the boy looked like the dad, and the girl looked like the mom. And they both, the kind of family that they look like each other a lot. But when you looked at the dad's posture, he was a little bit rounded forward. The kid's posture was way rounded forward. And the same thing for the daughter. We're training our society to be more folded forward. And this is one reason why we're having so many more problems with back pain, with neck pain. And you mentioned some of the stress and the mindfulness. A lot of that ties back to the body as well. When your body is in a folded posture, there's more stress on it because you can't breathe as well.
You know, Steve, you know you got me sitting up straight here right now.
You know what? You have not lived until you've been in front of an audience of 1,500 people and said, I'm here to talk about posture, and see 1,500 people all sit up straighter.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you started saying that, I was conscious, but it makes a lot of sense. So that's a message for employers, right? I mean, that's why it's important that employers focus on, you know, this part of total well-being, that if people aren't practicing good posture, it has an impact on their health and an impact on their productivity, correct?
Both, and there's studies showing that the health impact especially is way more than anybody thought. It's not just the inactivity part of it. It's when you train your body to be folded in sitting, your body doesn't work as well. Digestion doesn't work as well. The things that you'd expect, like back pain, obviously, and this is one of the big problems that employers have, neck pain, headaches, these are all things that are well affected by improving postural habits and postural environment. But even things like heart disease and diabetes are impacted by posture. And there's been, but on a productivity and a stress part of it, think of somebody that you know that is a powerful person, that is an influential person. How's their posture? Are they hunched over? Are they strong and projecting authority? If you want to be taken seriously, you want to be standing tall. If you're training your body to be folded, that's not how you're standing.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Ron, this all makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's just, you know, we talk about all these pieces, and here's a very important one.
It really, it makes a lot of sense. And, Stephen, you said chiropractic is the Rodney Dangerfield, but I think you don't give yourself enough credit. I think chiropractic has really become much more mainstream over a number of years, where it's now accepted by insurance for reimbursement. And in many rural areas, the chiropractor is the leading professional in that community, helping people that don't otherwise have access to healthcare services. So it's always good to see and hear that.
I really appreciate you saying that, because that's something that we see a lot of, and I've been in the profession for literally decades, and it's astounding how I'll go to dinner with friends that are orthopedic surgeons and neurologists, and the respect that we have in those quarters. But even so, my perception is that chiropractic has not made the contribution to society that I know that we can, because there's so many problems, especially the easy ones like back pain and neck pain, that should be being treated by a chiropractor that aren't yet being treated by one.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the posture focus that you have today. Are there any particular wearables that that you promote or use or connect with in your services, or is it just more of an awareness and a physical structuring of how you sit or how you stand? Are there wearables that you recommend?
Absolutely, and there's wearables fall under the umbrella of tools for strengthening posture, and there's a number of different ones in the market. I'm a fan of the Lumo Lift, because it has a it has a posture little buzz that when you bend forward, you can program it to give you a buzz every few minutes if you're not sitting straight during that time, and it also tracks your steps. And there's a version that has the corporate buzzes and bells to work with different team training exercises, but the posture becomes a very personal thing in that you need to feel what's right for your body. And the challenge is, once you've spent a big chunk of your life folded, what you believe standing straight is, feels like, may not be the case, which is one reason why, in terms of awareness, the first thing we recommend is taking a posture picture. But wearables are good. There's all different kinds of them, and any tool like that makes sense.
I don't need a vehicle that'll give me a little zap if I'm sitting the wrong way. My wife does that. She tells me to sit up straight. You know, it's kind of like your teachers in school. I have to do one full disclosure. I was watching Shark Tank a few weeks ago, and they were promoting something called Better Back, which is a wearable that you could sit around the house with and learn to sit in a more posture appropriate fashion. So I tend to try to wear that at night when I can. So I know there are some wearables that are helpful out there.
I think things like that make sense, although, it's funny because I saw that same Shark Tank, and this may not be politically correct, but I was jumping up and down when they had that on, because the representation that woman invented it was not quite accurate. If you look at something called Nada Chair, NADA chair, it's something that I've used in practice for years. It's a great device. And what the Better Back chair is doing something good, it bugs me when somebody says that they invented something when I look at the two things and I look at some of the history of it, it doesn't appear like that was truth.
Well, it seems to work, at least the awareness.
It does work. It makes a lot of sense. And there's other things like that as well. I've got a standing desk that I use that's an upright ergo desk. I've got different kinds of things that I'll sit on. I sit on an exercise ball at my desk a lot of times. There's a lot of ways you can improve your postural environment, and that's one of the things I'll be talking about at my presentation at the IHC forum.
So, Stephen, if an employer who's listening to this program says, "Hey, this makes sense," how do I get started? How would you guide them to get started?
In terms of short-term easy, go to posturemonth.org, and there's a free toolkit that they can download to put up some flyers in the office about posture awareness, posture control, posture environment, which is what you want to be aware of in terms of posture. Things you can do to improve it, or control environment, or all the different tools going out there. In terms of specific advice on it, that's what I do. We work with companies, and we've got a network of certified posture exercise professionals globally that work to help strengthen posture, and some of those can do on-site lunch and learns, because posture is something that works out best when it's hands-on. But starting a program where you're even just taking a posture picture, the Posture Zone app is a free app that people can download to see what their own best posture looks like, to start benchmarking what standing tall means to them.
Hey Stephen.
And then
Stephen,
come back in a year, see what it looks like next year.
Hey, Stephen, what's that app again, please? I think that's very interesting. What is the app?
The app is Posture Zone, P-O-S-T-U-R-E Zone. And
one thing that
a lot of professionals do is when you take a posture picture of a patient when they first come in, you do it against a grid. And I know some employers that have put a Posture Zone grid in the workplace, and that's something that they take a picture as part of the annual exam that they do, or as a screening. So that's a benchmark. right now, would you be curious to see a clean picture of you from the side, standing the way you thought standing straight was from 5 years ago, and to see how your posture has changed? Benchmarking and observing it is the beginning of strengthening it.
So, is Body Zone a place for employers to go as well?
Body Zone is the public face, due disclosure, some of the things I've talked about are people that we've worked with, but then not my company. My company is Body Zone. Bodyzone.com is a public facing site. It has posture exercises for the public. The book, it has information about the book that I wrote, Stand Taller, Live Longer. We deal with a lot of professionals on posture practice, and if an employer wants something for themselves locally or in multiple locations, contacting me through posture practice makes the most sense. Posture Zone is our tool for professionals as well.
Are there some studies out there that either you or others have done around posture that would show an employer, you know, some metrics on why this is important and how it can kind of move the needle forward on health and productivity?
A lot. There's a lot of different things on posture. When people get up and they're standing up, moving, their attention's better, their attitude is better. In terms of learning how to connect posture with reduction of back pain, which is probably the easiest metric from an employer point of view. There's studies showing that when people are spending less time sitting, back pain incidence goes down. And from a staff happiness point of view, that's probably the easiest thing to show. But when you get people moving, there's studies of kids in school that they get them sitting on balls, and you would think that the children would be getting more distracted, but instead their focus went up and their learning went up.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, Stephen, we got about a minute to go, and I want to allow you to kind of, you know, leave our audience with a few takeaways and how they can get in touch with you. And then to remind my audience right now that Stephen will be conducting a workshop at IAC Forum and Expo here in Atlanta, you know, coming up week after next. So you can come spend an hour with Stephen and get more in depth and then talk to him, you know, afterwards as well. So Stephen, you know, leave our audience with a few takeaways and then how they can get in touch with you, please.
In terms of posture, be posture aware of yourself. Start looking at your people's bodies when they're working, because if they're hunched over working, they're going to have more problems than if they're standing taller. Some things that they have to be doing in front of a computer, check. Encourage frequent posture breaks. 60 seconds every 30 minutes to get up and stretch is good. But if you're going to have them get up, don't just get up and move any which way. Try to have it where it's more focused, where the stretch that they're doing when they're getting up is moving the body opposite from the way they've been flexed. If you want to get a hold of me, my email is drw@bodyzone.com, or go to Posture Practice and Bodyzone, hit the contact us, and it'll get back to me soon.
Stephen, that's a very, very good topic, and appreciated the discussion, and look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks here in Atlanta.
Fantastic. I look forward to meeting. Excellent.
Thanks,
take
Stephen.
Care. Bye-bye.
Good discussion today, Ron and Jonathan. I mean, mindfulness and posture, both make sense. I mean, it's logical. I mean, these are all, you know, just like financial wellness, these are all different aspects and different niches, and it all comes together for total well-being and bottom line for an employer, too. You know, I mean, it just, you know,
absolutely.
I wasn't joking when I said I set up straight. Jonathan's looking at me.
Well, let me tell you this, Doug. I'm down here in Florida where the average age is a little bit higher than the rest of the country. And if you look around at a lot of the folks who have not practiced good posture, you do see a lot more folks leaning over with bent backs, with curvatures of the spine that probably was partly developed because they didn't sit up straight, they didn't have good posture, and they suffer the physical consequences in later age. So it's good advice for all of us, what our teachers said, what our mothers said, what our wives still tell us, to sit up straight and quit slouching. So good segments, very important.
Yeah, Joe's segment on mindfulness is a very, very good segment. Well, again, I want to remind our audience that you know, you still time to join us in Atlanta. Both these topics will be discussed at our forum and expo. You can register at theihccforum.com. And while you're there, too, you can also take a deeper dive into our remaining events, our private exchange forum coming up in Baltimore, September 8th through the 9th, and our IHC Forum West, which will follow right after the election on November 8th and 9th out in Las Vegas. So to our audience out there, I really appreciate you spending an hour with us today. You have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
See you. Bye.